Good afternoon. I'd like to call to order the Techno Advisory Committee meeting. Today is Thursday, August 6th. It is 1:30 p.m. First item on the agenda is a termination of a quorum.
We do have a quorum. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Moving on, the minutes for May 7th, 2026. As you can see in attachment 2A, I get a motion.
And also move.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Again, if you could please, due to the large room, just please clearly state your name when you make a motion and second for the minutes. That'd be great. Thank you. Next item, staff reports. Item A, Mr. Baker.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you can see, we have a pretty full agenda today. Interesting one, I hope. But attachment 3A, I'll be quick. Spent about 73% of the budget through June 30th, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do you need a motion?
Tomasi, move to approve.
Costco, second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign. Motion carries. Item B, technical progress report. Mr. Stewart.
All right. Thank you. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Just two updates on the federal side today. We're continuing to track the progress with Build America 250. I talked a little bit about it in May. There was a lot of momentum going into May, and there hasn't been a whole lot since. My money is on that there's going to be a short-term extension of the current IIJA when that expires on September 30th. Actually, I read something today that the Senate is likely to propose a continuing resolution that would be in effect until December 11th. That's supposed to happen this week. So still, we're trying to just decipher what's in the current language, what that bill looks like. I have a whole page of notes. I'm not going to go through each of those things, but, one of the big things is we're starting to see with this bill, as it's proposed right now, kind of a reversal of the approach of adding new components to formula grant programs, how freight was added in the FAST Act and all those environmental programs in our current legislation. So what that might lead to is kind of a reduced federal congressional vision of, what that legislation looks like, and then more autonomy for states. So like ODOT and other state DOTs will have more wiggle room to kind of manage their programs as they see fit. That's kind of the theme of it right now. A lot of, that core infrastructure, big investment in bridges is something that I keep reading. I think a lot of you have probably heard about stuff with autonomous vehicles, rollback of EV incentives, things like that. Those are some of the things that I keep reading about. We are, as what's proposed right now, Safe Streets for All would continue, but it would go from $5 billion a year to $3.75 billion per year. We're kind of operating under the assumption that our carbon reduction funding program is going to go away. That seems to be the, what everyone believes. But we're in the same boat as all 400 MPOs across the country. So if and when that, if and when that happens, we're hoping that, other programs like CMAQ and SDBG can kind of absorb those projects. We're obviously committed to making sure that those projects continue. In a nutshell, that's what we know so far. The other thing I wanted to mention just real quickly is proven safety countermeasures. Some of you may have seen this in the last few weeks. This was kind of quietly rolled out in mid-July. These underpin a lot of the design of safety-related projects in our region and in the country. There were 28 proven safety countermeasures, and all the speed management ones have gone away, bicycle lanes have gone away, and road diets have gone away, which is really interesting timing. Amelia's going to talk in a couple of minutes about our final road diet report. There's still a lot of guidance up there at the federal level about the efficacy of road diets and the recommendation of them, yet they're no longer on this list. so far we haven't really seen any data to support why they were removed or like even just the rationale for it. So, you know, hoping that we'll have a little more clarity as time goes on, but that's where we are right now. So I know that's a lot to digest, but that's where we are right now, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Okay, thank you.
I see no questions. Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Moving on to item C, AMAT's federal funds report. Ms. Prater.
Thank you. So July 1st, we started the new fiscal year, and a couple of items have actually encumbered money so far. We're just getting started, so I do expect a couple more projects to sell in the coming weeks here, probably before the next meeting. But for the most part, we don't have any projects this year in the fourth quarter, which I'm thrilled about. Anything that's in the fourth quarter is like preliminary engineering or right-of-way or things of that nature. So we don't have to worry about that fourth quarter bubble, like running out of money and, you know, not being able to get a loan or anything like that. So hopefully that should continue. So speaking of loans, we will probably need a loan again this year in STBG. We did repay our loan this year, and if you look at the STBG, there is a negative, basically $2.76 million, and that's basically because we repaid the loan from last year to NOACA that they loaned us money, and that was $2.8 million. So it's pretty even. So carbon reduction, as Matt mentioned, may be going away. So we're looking into other avenues to possibly figure out how to fund those projects. For CMAQ, if you look at our CMAQ listing, we are also very, very, very negative in our CMAQ bottom line this year, and that's pretty much a statewide program. So there's a lot more flexibility in that program. And I know that statewide there's still a balance available, so we should be able to get all of our projects funded in that program. So. And lastly, TASA, we still have a positive balance at the end of this year, so we should not be alone in TASA this year. So, anyone have any questions?
I don't have a question, but I will just point out, and I know sometimes, you know, loans, any kind of loan sounds scary or negative balances sound scary, but, you know, we've also been informed that, you know, last year we encumbered as much money as NOACA did because they didn't spend their encumbrances. They spent about 30% of theirs. MORPC's only spent 23% of their encumbrance this year. So there is money out there. So I think that we're not flying blind like, oh, well, we hope there's going to be, like, there is money out there that we have access to. And that is why we push this over programming, because we're funding our program at 100% and other programs aren't. And so, you know, I appreciate all of your willingness to work, you know, and understand that that's kind of how we do things. And we still haven't had a project slip yet, so because of the funding not being available. So we feel really good about our funding strategy.
And also, we had the best encumbrance rate last year. We were funded at 100% because we got loans. That's why we were funded at 100%. But we actually spent, like, more money than, like, for our size than any other MPO.
can somebody, what happens to if an MPO doesn't use their funds? Where does that money go?
Well, they used to take them back if it was more than 25% of their budget for the year, if they didn't spend it. But now with the loans, they transfer it. Like, you know, we need a loan this year. You know, we'll get a loan from MORPC or NOACA or something. And then in the budget side, they take the loan back out and put it in their budget for the following year. So that gets them possibly to not lose the money. If it's more than 25% and they try to carry it over, they used to take it from them and distribute it among the other MPOs. Do they still do that for us?
Well, legally, they can only do that with a certain amount because a lot of it is by law comes, you know, we get an amount that cannot be taken away from us. And so a lot of what's happening now, because the state used to give us what was called STBG discretionary, so we would get our lump sum and then the ODOT would actually give us a little more. They've pretty much gone away from that because during the last bill, we got more money as a general allocation for STBG. So at this point, most of the money we loan it as, you know, loan and give back is trying to be good stewards. But in the end, a lot of it, I'd say that's still, Chad, I don't know if it's 100%, but most of it is, it can't be taken away. They just get, as we like to call it, dinged. By the state. And what happens is the state looks at all of our funding and says, geez, the MPOs aren't doing their job. And then that impacts the access to other funds because then they don't, you know, our safety projects become less important to ODOT because it's like, well, the MPOs have all this money. Why aren't they using it? And that's what we want to make sure for our region. We can say we're spending it all.
And we're spending any
that
we can get.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Jim. I just want to say I think we all appreciate the effort you guys go through. Because basically what you did was increase how much money we spent in STBG by 20 to 25% last year. And if they do the same thing, we'll do the same thing this year. And I think that benefits all of us around the table. So thank you for the effort you guys go through to do that.
I think it's worth noting, like what you pointed out earlier about there's no fourth quarter projects.
Yes.
You're the only MPO that has no fourth quarter projects. Most of the MPO program, the local program, goes into fourth quarter, and then inevitably something happens, and it kicks over to the next year. So keeping everything in the first three quarters with the ability then to, if you have to do something in the fourth quarter, you can still do it in this fiscal year, is very, very big. You guys really are the model MPO as far as how all that works.
I've been really, really, really pushing for that for quite some time, and trying to push our communities to move the dates up as just a little, you know, a couple months maybe. And that way, heaven forbid somebody gets a really bad bid, they can still possibly rebid in the same year. So, because if it slips into the next year, it dings everybody. I mean, it looks bad on us, it looks bad on the sponsor, it looks bad on ODOT. We don't want that. So we've really been pushing, and I mean, I'm sure everybody in this room that's been in a project review meeting knows, hey, don't you want to move from like April to January? Can you get better bids? I'm sure you've all heard it. So that was me making sure there's no projects in the fourth quarter, so nothing slips into the next year. So.
Thank you. Moving on to old business. Item A, AMS Road Die Report. Ms. Hoffmeyer.
All right. Road Die Report update. Road dies, sometimes referred to as lane reductions, are roadway configurations that reduce the number or width of lanes. They're often used on roads experiencing declining traffic volumes or a high crash history. They have historically been considered a cost-effective way to improve roadway safety. As Matt Stewart has recently touched on, the federal guidance has changed a bit with road diets, with them being taken off their proven safety countermeasure list after being included since 2012 with no definitive rationale as to why. But you can still find on the FHWA's website some articles that will support the benefits of them. Our first road diet report was produced in 2015, but that was mainly focusing on identifying roadway segments with reduced traffic and excess capacity. 60 segments were identified then, and as of 2026, 28 have been fully implemented. In this newest version of the road diet report, we're doing a statistical analysis on 16 of those 28. To be included in this analysis, the segments needed to have at least 3 years of crash data, both pre- and post-implementation to allow for an analysis. They were also given 1 year post-construction dedicated as an adjustment period to kind of allow for drivers to get used to the flow where crash data was not considered. Here we just have a map of all 28 with the ones that were analyzed in orange and the ones that were not analyzed in blue. And that does not mean they won't ever be analyzed. It just means we're waiting for more data. Alrighty. The data sheets that are provided in the report provide a crash history from 2012 all the way to 2024, covering crash severity, fatal, serious injury, and property damage only, as well as crash types such as angle, right turn, pedestrian, and etc. Crash comparison tables are also included that will show pre-construction averages, post-construction averages, and percent change for both severity and what is not shown. There will be another one identical to that, but for crash types as well. For each analyzed segment, a Welch 2 sample t-test is performed. And this means that they're comparing two means of two independent groups to determine whether there is a significant difference between pre- and post-implementation crash data. You'll get a little statistical box with each data sheet. A p-value below 0.05 is what's going to indicate a statistically significant difference. The findings are then summarized in a summary table that will show you crash percent changes by each roadway segment. Of the 16 segments that we analyzed, 9 showed a decrease in total crashes. However, it is important to note that percent changes for categories such as fatal and serious injury or FSI crashes may appear large due to small sample sizes. For example, in areas where FSI crashes were rare, an increase from 1 crash to 2 can produce a large percent change, even though the actual numbers will remain low. And several segments also have limited pre- or post-implementation data. And as more data becomes available, these will even out and we will get to be able to view a better, clearer picture of long-term trends. The report will also continue by highlighting road diet characteristics, design considerations, benefits, concerns, planning tips, as well as local feedback that's gathered by ANS. And we are requesting a motion for the Technical Advisory Committee to approve this final report. But I can also take any questions.
I had a question.
Go ahead.
Well, I had a question if the staff thinks this is a one and done, or is it going to be a every 2 or 3 year thing, not knowing what you might be required in the future?
I think the hope would be that we'll be continuing to analyze them as more data comes online, so we'll probably wait for some of the others. Like, I think, you know, Hudson just completed one on 303 that I'm, you know, that I think that we'll wait till we get a big enough batch of new ones that we can analyze. And it's kind of hard for sure to say when that will be, but I think the idea would be that we'll be revisiting it again, and hopefully within the next 5 years or less. I don't think there'll be as big of a gap this time from 2015 to 2026.
The thresholds presented in the report with respect to when diets are a good idea or not, in particular the peak hour, 8:75, was that a result of all the analysis you came up with, or was it more anecdotal just based on our area's diets that worked
or
didn't
work? We did base a lot of the ADP and the levels on, remember what was in the 2015 report, is we kind of kept those same thresholds for sure. And then with the 3 years pre and post, that is simply just you need at least 3 years of data to kind of even have a comparison between the two. And I don't know if you guys have anything else to touch on.
Just I would add, in chapter 2, where we kind of go over those design considerations like you just mentioned, a lot of that was national guidance. We, especially Matt Mullen, was really digging into what all those federal highway guidance documents say and other studies that have been done. That's what we found best practices nationally.
So we haven't taken our analysis and said this is the number that we think ADT wise peak hour. We haven't done that.
Yeah. Okay.
But now I kind of wish that we would.
Well,
yeah. Actually, yeah. So maybe that second report will come sooner than you think.
Once again, we are requesting a motion.
second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item B in old business, MS 2022 to 2024 crash report. Mr. Stewart.
All right. So I have to come up and kind of say we messed up, which is never fun. But when our staff was working on this upcoming crash report, the 2023 through 2025 crash report, it was discovered that we unintentionally omitted a few high intersections that should have been on the high crash intersections. So you can see these up on the screen. There were 11. Six of those are actually in the top 50, so it is pretty significant. After a careful review, we did not find any segments or sections that were left off the list, so that list is correct. But we have this summary table here, and then we've included in the packet the overall ranking of what is now all 228 of those intersections, because all of those rankings changed modestly with these additional 11. So pending committee approval, AMETS will make the officially make the changes to the report, including the tables, the map of the top 50, and then update the text of the report. We wanted to make sure we brought that to you and let you know, hey, there were actually a few that should have been on there, but we're not. So are there any questions?
Okay. You're forgiven.
And, yeah, we're looking for a motion to approve this amended list so we can make those changes.
Falling move to approve.
Juror, second.
Any further discussion on this item? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Moving on to new business. Public participation plan. Mr. Prater.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The time has come for AMATS to update its public participation plan, or as we call it, the 3P. The 3P details the processes by which AMATS uses to engage the public during the regional transportation planning process here in the greater Akron area. This current update to the 3P is unique in that it comes on the heels of a limited update that we completed back in December of 2024. At that time, we determined that there were some ways that we should improve how we coordinate public engagement in conjunction with our area's transit agencies. That slate of changes was approved by the Policy Committee in December of 2024, and those changes are included in the 3P here as Appendix F. Now, our current update began in late spring with three steps. First, we undertook a review of some of the new best practices being put forward by the federal government with regards to regional transportation agencies such as ours in terms of public participation. Upon reviewing those practices, we decided to incorporate two concepts into our draft 3P. One of them is visualization, the other one is scenario planning. Secondly, we also undertook a comparison of what other NPOs are doing across the country with regards to public participation, and we wanted to see what we could learn from them that we could incorporate into our draft 3P. Among the agencies whose practices we looked at, two were here in Ohio, OKI and MVRPC. Third and finally, we conducted a comprehensive review of our own 3P practices to see what we could do better and possibly more efficiently. As a result of these three steps, AMATS, as we think, has created a draft 3P that has eliminated some redundant passages, and we've also designed one that's more visually appealing and possibly more easily comprehensible by the public. Our update process will span 45 days and actually commences today, and we'll kick off tonight with our online Citizens Involvement Committee meeting, during which the draft 3P will be presented, hopefully for comment and discussion. As I said, the comment period spans 45 days and will include a second CIC meeting scheduled for September the 17th before the period concludes on September the 20th. We've been doing the best that we can to promote awareness of the draft 3P and the public comment period through a variety of means, especially tapping our agency website, amatsplanning.org. And I'm proud to announce that today that due to the hard work of Heather, an online comment form will be going live so that people can submit their comments directly to the agency, along with accessing a link to a PDF of the draft 3P that you see before you. Along with utilizing our agency's website, we've been relying on social media, most notably our X and Facebook pages and our YouTube channel. We also have a whole series of newspaper ads scheduled for regional advertisements here in the Record Courier and the Beacon Journal. Last week, some of you may have received an email blast promoting the draft 3P and our public comment period, and we intend to continue things along those lines. If there's any questions regarding what we're doing to update the 3P, I'd be glad to try to answer them for you right now. Thank you very much. Oh, yes, Mr. Heather.
We share some of the same challenges. I just wondered if, in your experience, you foresee more AMATS public meetings being virtual, and if that platform presents its own set of challenges.
Well, I think that certainly more of them are going to be going online. It's it seems to be more accessible for the public, provided they can get to a computer. I think maybe I should have mentioned, too, that along with our online comment form, we do have paper copies available at the office, too, if somebody wants to come in and fill them out. But I think submitting online would probably be easier. But I can see us continuing to do it. We haven't slowed down. We've actually been having more online meetings than what we've had in-person public meetings. I would not disregard having in-person public meetings.
Oh, absolutely. I just think that the challenge and everyone being as busy as they are with their own lives, the agencies and the geographic area covered presents a challenge to get someone to drive, say, half an hour to come to an AMATS meeting or an EFCO meeting. Be all inclusive.
Are there any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you. Moving right into resolutions. Item A, resolution 2026-15. Ms. Prater.
Thank you. This is resolution 2026-15. It's amendment 13 to our current TIP, and it revises funding for three projects and adds two projects to the TIP. So the first project is the Kenmore leg. This is just adding more funding, and they actually move the construction phase further out, give them more time to fund it. Highland Road increased their funding almost by double. State Road, we're adding the construction phase. And we expect that to be in 2028. 303 was added to the project, or to the TIP, and Crooked Road was added to the TIP. Some of those projects are from the most recent round of funding that we did, and they hadn't been added by May. So this is just kind of finishing up adding all the rest of the projects to our TIP from the last round of funding. So I will comment that the Kenmore leg is not air quality neutral, so we have to go through a process and we have to get concurrence from all the other MPOs and the feds so that we can add this to the TIP and the STIP. So that process won't probably happen until late October. So, anyone have any questions?
Seeing no questions, does this require a motion?
All in move to approve.
Demasi, second.
Motion is second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Resolution 2026-16, Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 6B is the TIP amendment for PARTA. This amendment seeks to add funds to the TIP for PARTA for the purchase of a service vehicle for on-road support. This new project will be scheduled in fiscal year 2027. The total project cost is $40,000. The 80% federal share is $32,000. And the staff is requesting approval of Resolution 2026-16. Are there any questions?
Seeing none, do we have a motion?
Motion to approve, Collins.
Holden, second.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Item C, Resolution 2026-17. Again, Mr. Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 16, your packet. The purpose of this resolution is to approve support for infrastructure condition and congestion-related performance targets. It's been a longstanding policy at AMATS to use quantifiable data in project selection. The AMATS funding policy guidelines currently employ performance data in the application process, such as ADT or pavement condition ratings and project selection. With this resolution, the staff is requesting support for ODOT statewide targets for national highway system, pavement, and bridge conditions, the level of travel time reliability, and the level of truck time reliability. It approves an Akron urbanized area target for peak hour excessive delay, non-single occupancy vehicle travel, and project level emissions reduction. AMATS agrees to plan and program projects so that they contribute toward the accomplishment of ODOT and area-wide targets for each performance measure. AMATS agrees to continue using performance-based decision-making as part of the project selection and funding process. And lastly, the staff is requesting that the policy committee support the intent of ODOT's statewide targets for air quality improvements, meaning that CMAQ-funded projects demonstrate air quality benefits. The staff is requesting approval of Resolution 2026-16. Are there any questions? 17.
I'll make a motion. Sarah Whitman.
Second, Sayers.
Any further discussions? Last item. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution carries. Other business.
We have none.
Seeing no other business, can I get a motion to adjourn?
Motion, Collins.
Jurish, second.
Motion is second. All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.